Before we get started, a special thank you is in order to our friends over at Stanley Customs. Stanley Customs creates amazing custom sports figurines for all you athletes out there. Right now, our listeners will get 15% off their order, and all interviewees will get 25% off their order simply by going to Stanley_Customs on Instagram and telling them that Globally Ballin sent you. Thank you. Hey, everyone, and thank you for joining us, and welcome back to the Globally Ballin podcast. We appreciate your support and have a special interview and episode for you today. So sit back, relax, and enjoy learning about sports and opportunities around the world. Here comes the music. I gotta let you go.
He goes, I'll give you $750,000 a year to sign with us.
Without right even now, showing off.
He goes, don't even walk over to the field.
Because I had no idea that my passport was even expired.
Let me tell you, I sent out 6,000 emails.
Gentlemen, how do you use a celebrity for good? You know, up until that point, most of us, as athletes, were taught how to use the celebrity to manipulate, to get a girl, to get famous, to get whatever it is.
Had a couple guys get robbed at gunpoint, and one of them was just like, Jay, get me out.
Actually broke my neck. I was paralyzed from the waist down, and I was never supposed to walk again, much less be able to play football again.
We're hours away from kind of the nearest hospital. He ended up losing his leg over it.
You finished the game with a broken hand?
Yeah, I finished the game with...
I'm Rio 2016 silver medalist and Asian Games 2018 gold medalist.
I don't think a lot of people know the opportunities there are actually to play overseas, especially in the women's category.
There are some who would still keep their 9-to-5 jobs because the pay for being an athlete isn't enough.
Don't complain when we look like idiots abroad in these big tournaments.
What league or country gave you the best pay contract-wise?
Probably Turkey my last season.
Okay. This episode is also brought to you by our friends over at Creating Young Minds. Creating Young Minds is a nonprofit out of Lewisville, Texas, brought to you by Dr. Shira Ackerman and Coach Mathis Crowder. Creating Young Minds strives to bring success to the lives of young men in ways in which they may have not reached that success otherwise. One of the ways in which they do this is through their professional basketball team, the Lewisville Yellow Jackets, who play in TBL or the Basketball League. Make sure you go check out Creating Young Minds on all major platforms, including Facebook and LinkedIn. I encourage you to dive more into the mission of Creating Young Minds as they strive to bring the European model of basketball to the United States. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, David, for joining us for another episode. Now, you've been here before and a little bit different. First time we've had a video with you. You were here at an older episode, but thank you for joining us.
I've got that face for the podcast, don't I? It's not much for the VCast, I'm sure.
Well, I was going to tell you, you'd probably be proud. I just had Parm garlic wings before we got started.
Ooh, my man.
So where are you right now? Yeah, oh, no, it doesn't get much better. No, where are you right now, David? What are you up to?
I'm in Memphis, Tennessee, getting ready for a combine tomorrow.
All right. And so for any of you who haven't seen before, we have worked with the Basketball League before. These are past audio episodes that we've done. You can see episodes with David himself, as well as Evelyn, Daniel Green, two of the owners of a team, a player, and a new team that we're going to talk about at some point. The Syracuse Stallions. So those are all available. The Globally Ballin podcast, you can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. All past episodes we've done with TBL. So David, right now you're in Memphis. This is not the first place that you've been, though, since the year I started. Is that correct?
Yes. A couple weeks ago, we were in El Reno, Oklahoma, which is a kind of a northwest suburb of Oklahoma City, and it's about an hour away from our newest team in Enid, Oklahoma.
Okay. And what are you doing when you go over there all the time? You're traveling all over the place. I know this. What are you doing when you go out there?
Well, I try to maximize my opportunity. So like today I drove down and had lunch with a young lady in Jackson, Tennessee, who was interested in helping us get a team going there. And then tomorrow morning I'll have breakfast with somebody that's interested in a team. And then we'll have the combine, and then tomorrow night, I've got somebody who represents somebody that wants a team. So, you know, I try to maximize every square minute. And if not, then I have time to work on online on the computer and spend some time by myself getting ready for the next event.
So you mentioned new teams, David, and we're going to take a look here at some of the years that TBL has been around and the shifts that we've seen. Globally Bomb, people that have listened before, we've done a lot of leagues and teams and all this thing, and it's obviously very difficult to have the same teams every year for a beginning league. I mean, it's almost nearly impossible because things happen, speed bumps occur, changes, whatever. So this is at least what we look like year one with TBL, some teams ranging from, you know, Kansas City and Yakima way up in San Diego all the way over in Albany. And so at the very beginning, at least, spanned across the United States with 10 teams. And as you know, and other people know, that this is not what the next year looks like. But we do have some that people might be familiar with just from the past two teams for sure. At least the one we'll focus on, though, is Albany. Albany is a team that anyone who minor league basketball familiar knows Albany Patroons. They've heard of them before, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so Albany was around. What was the history of Albany?
Albany started in 1983 with the CBA. Their first coach was a guy named Dean the Dream Memminger that played with the Knicks, and he made it through about two-thirds of the season, and they weren't happy with what they were getting from the product on the floor, so they replaced him with a guy named Phil Jackson. And Phil came in and had a decent end of the season. I think he won more than he lost, but not a lot more. And Phil went to Puerto Rico on vacation. And while he was there, they called him up and asked him, did he want to be the full-time coach? And he said, great, I was just about to go to the unemployment office and start filing for unemployment. The next year, 1984, was the year that I actually went in, and we won the CBA championship. I think Phil coached one more season before he took the assistant coaching job with the Bulls. He was Doug Collins' assistant coach, and you know the rest is basketball history. But when Phil walked out, Bill Musselman walked in. And Bill Musselman coached there for two or three years, and he would become the first head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves. When Bill Musselman walked out, George Karl walked in. George Karl, who had been a coach in, I think, maybe Cleveland, he came here for a stint and then went back out to Seattle, where he actually took two supersonic teams to the finals and lost to Michael's teams and the Bulls. George would go on to be a top four or five coach in wins in history in the NBA. And, you know, those were three coaches over a decade that ended up being coaching legends that all coached in this one pro town that not a lot of people knew. A guy named Brandon Casey did a wonderful movie, if anybody can get it, called the Minor League Mecca. And it's about the first 10 years. And it really does a nice job. And I say that because I'm in it a little bit. But, you know, I was fortunate enough to play with them for a year, win a championship, and see what this level of basketball could be. It's a big deal in Albany. And it's a big deal in Jamestown. And it's going to be a big deal in all of our markets, but certain markets are just built for this. And that old armory is a venue that is on the historic registry. It is a gorgeous facility that feels like you should be watching Jake LaMotta fight Sugar Ray Leonard with smoke billowing and beer on your feet, because it's got that old school feel to it. And that's really cool. And we've got several really, really neat buildings like the Owensboro Sports Center in Owensboro, Kentucky, a really neat building that once Adolph Rupp coached in. And you go over to our newest team in Enid, Oklahoma, has a great venue called the Stride Center. And I think that's going to be one of the best in the league, 5,000 plus seats, jumbotrons. But it's in Enid, Oklahoma, so we're going to be a big deal there. The Outlaws are going to do really well, I believe.
Yeah, so you know, talking about Albany, obviously the first thing that I came across was the armory. Just the way that it looks, just like you were saying, it looks, when you go in there, everything about it is Albany. They're not, you know, it doesn't have different teams written all over the place. It's Albany through and through, everything about it. You have the colors and the seats. It's clearly meant for this level of basketball, and it's a great feel. It's really cool. I do love that one a lot. Yeah. So, all right, moving on, let's go back and look at kind of – So that was year one. And then coming off there, this is when I joined, right? This is when me and my team at Globally Ballin' start following TBL a little bit more. And these are some of the teams I get to see. I've mentioned it before in past episodes. I was at the draft combine. This was what was going to be. I started this year, 2020, and got cut short. But you have some teams that were there before, like Albany and Owensboro and Jamestown. And then you have a lot of these new ones coming in, basically every other one, ranging as far as Dallas to up in New York. Talk a little bit about those additional teams coming in at the beginning of the 2020 season.
Well, I think that, you know, what you see is that so from that year to the you know, our second year, we had five teams that didn't come back and five teams that did. And then we added seven new. But those 12 started and finished the season. Of the five that didn't come back, we now have a team in San Diego, so that proved that market could work. We have strong conversations going with Yakima to come back. Mesquite is very interested in coming back. Kansas City is very interested in coming back. So the reality is four out of those five of them actually talking to somebody about a New York City team. So we'll probably have those five markets back this season or next. So I think sometimes we have to take a step backwards with certain markets because geographically they don't fit. You know, with Yakima was a purely a flight situation where every game they played away, they had to fly to. That will change. If they come back, we'll have a team in Salem, probably a team in the Seattle region. So that will make that a destination, not just a place that you go to and play a couple games, but you'll go there and play three games. That makes sense. San Diego comes back with a new market in Fresno. So now we've got two teams in California, which lures Mesquite back and makes Mesquite make a lot more sense. So once you can get to three to four teams in these pods, then the travel just from a business model makes a lot of sense. And that's a lot of what we do. Aaron, we want to build a model that's unique. You know, if you look at it, to buy an NBA team is $1 billion and it costs $1.5 billion to run one. And a G League team is $10 million and it's going to cost you, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of $2 to $3 million to run one. An NBL Canada team is $500,000 and it's going to cost you $1.5 million to run one. So, you know, when you look at that, we're considerably under those. We're the one market, we're the one business model that everyone can make money as long as we keep the cost in line. So most of those markets were just too far out there. I mean, Kansas City now makes a lot of sense with Little Rock being 4 hours away, Enid's 4 hours away, Dallas is 7 hours away, Louisville is 7 hours away. We're talking to somebody in Wichita, which is just a couple hours away. So now they come back, their travel costs get cut from $50,000, $60,000 down to $10,000. So the business model starts to make a lot more sense.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I definitely wanted to talk about. We have, while on this list you see teams from Dallas to the New York area, these make sense, right? So you have Dallas and Louisville right next to each other, right? You have Jamestown and Albany, at least in the same state, and then you have some of the tri-state, and then you have the two Florida teams and a bunch in Ohio. And so while they are spanned from Dallas to New York, at least with the 2020 setup, they were set up in smaller pods. We're going to see in 2021 how that's even grown more, but that was at least the case in 2020. Also, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about, at least looking at these teams first, is the difference in cities. So you have like a massive Indianapolis, and you have a Dallas, and then you have the tiny little town of Jamestown, New York. And this difference in the different cities that can pick up a team and hold them very well, like Owensboro. How does that speak to the market of TBL teams? Does it matter the size? Does, you know, is that something you look for? Or how does that work?
Well, I was probably easier in the non-NBA cities. So I think it's harder for the Dallases and Indianapolis and possibly even the Tampa because they've got, you know, both, they've got pro basketball, they've got pro football, pro baseball. So they consider themselves major league towns. So that's not as easy. But we build a model that you can break even at 500-600 tickets. So the number isn't driven by, you know, you need 4,000 or 5,000 tickets to break even. You need 500-600 tickets, paid tickets consistently. And in that matter, all of those can work. But then a Jamestown, an Owensboro, an Enid, you know, those Albany, a Syracuse. We're a big deal in those markets. We'll do really, really well. I mean, I think that we'll have multiple teams this year that will be in that 1,500 to 2,500 seat range, which is profitable. It's a great environment, and it's a great show for us to work in for our players.
Going off that, you know, you said the NBA towns can sometimes cause a little bit more of difficulty for a team. What about a college town? Has that been any sort of problem? I mean, the one I'm thinking of right now is, you mentioned Wichita. Obviously, Wichita State basketball is really big. Have you seen any of that or not? You have Columbus in here, and obviously most of these cities all have colleges at least nearby. Has that been any sort of a noticeable difference?
No, probably the best example of that is, you know, the Syracuse Orangemen are really big. And our new team, the Syracuse Stallions, they're very, very open and honest about how they drew before they came into our league. And they drew pretty good in their second year, as long as they didn't go head-to-head with Syracuse. Well, with our season starting March 1st, I think we're going to have very few of those head-to-heads. You know, in Owensboro, Kentucky, even though they're 3 hours from Lexington, when University of Kentucky comes on, you're going to lose some fans if you got a game at the same time. So, you know, the more that we can get away from the major Division I or even small college season, the easier it is to fill it. But a college town does support sports. So Syracuse, you know, I look at some old footage of their teams, and you've got 700-800 fans just on one side packed in there, 1,000 fans. So there's no reason why they won't do really well at this little higher level that they've gone to.
And that brings us to 2021 here, so far at least. Like you said, bringing back everybody from 2020 to the next season, which really is a huge accomplishment. The more me and the people that work with me have looked into leagues like this, bringing everybody back by year, I guess, three now, it really is a massive accomplishment, David. But the bigger accomplishment, I think, is the new teams, for sure, at least. And I hope we didn't miss one. But as of now, we have 8, right? These are the set in stone 8 teams. We have Enid in Oklahoma, Little Rock Lightning, Syracuse, Anderson, which is in Indiana, Atlanta, Fresno, South Shore, that's Boston, correct?
Yes.
And San Diego. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so with these new teams together with your teams from last year, you are expanding now, right? We're going from coast to coast at this point. Bringing in Fresno and San Diego. And so you mentioned it before, but again, how are you addressing to make sure that you're not overexpanding and you're having manageable growth when it comes to teams in the league?
Well, again, you know, for us, we use the term growth is good, expansion is great. And it's because, Aaron, the more teams we get, the more players get opportunities. We can't have enough teams for the level of players that are good enough to play in this league. There's just a lot. I see it. I'll see 25, 30 kids tomorrow in Memphis, of which 10, 15 will be good enough to play. It's remarkable how much talent is in this country. So the talent won't drop off. The towns, it doesn't matter how many teams you have, because they're all unique to their town. We do not double up towns. We're not going to put, you know, 3 teams in Jamestown. We put 1 in Jamestown. So they have plenty of reason to come out and support their one team. And then, you know, with that, I just can see Syracuse and Albany being a wonderful rivalry. They're less than 2 hours apart. They both are going to support their hometown team, but I think they'll get in vans and buses and make that trip in between each other when they play them, especially when it gets to playoffs. So I think there's a real benefit to expanding. We're at 20. We're going to be anywhere from 24 to 32 before we're done. We're not done expanding. I've got two or three more teams I've already taken contracts from that we're just designing the logos right now. And it's one of those things, Aaron, when COVID hit, you know, we obviously it hurts all of us because that was the prime revenue games. The second half of the season is when we all make money. That's when the fans base is building up and it's about to really take off. And you have a tough call. Well, what do you do? And a lot of people just sit back and they're going to wait. They're going to watch and they're going to see what happens. And when does the country open up? When does this happen? Well, our thought was, yeah, that's an option. Or we could take this as a blessing and a time that we can go out and start building, that we can go and use this extra time to spend time out there and grow our league. So rather than being a curse, we saw it as a blessing of time. And then quite frankly, as the protest with Black Lives Matter happens, you know, we are an antidote to a lot of that social ill. We have young African-American athletes, often African-American coaches, that are community assets in their community. We're examples, we're role models. We're someone that people want to sponsor and be a part of it. So there are towns going, wow, I want that in my town. I want what they do in the community here. You're showing this B-roll behind us where you're interviewing the folks in Jamestown who do a wonderful job in their community. We're an asset to Jamestown. We're proud of what we do. So that started creating a real desire for us. And quite frankly, right now, the fact that the coronavirus hasn't gone away is meaning that there's going to be a lot of people that we're going to have access to that we wouldn't have access to as players. Our level of talent is going to go up because it's hard for Americans to go across the shores right now. People look at us like we're from Wuhan, China, and they're not crazy about having Americans go all over the place because we lead the world in amount of new cases and deaths. So, you know, you have to accept that's a reality to us right now. And until this all washes out, we're just going to keep growing and building and keeping our perspective on opportunity for the league, for the teams, for the team market owners, and for our players and the communities that we impact. I mean, Jamestown this year has had no fewer than 4 major events, camps, clinics, week-long entertainment pieces for their young people. And when you see them doing it, it's just awesome. I mean, I talked to Kayla Crosby, their team market owner. She's almost in tears. She's so excited because we're really impacting a lot of lives. So even though the season's not going on, that doesn't mean that we're not effective and impacting and growing.
Let's talk a little bit about, like you were saying, how COVID-19 hit and everything, but you are still obviously on the move. You're having combines. What are some of the adjustments that the league has made to make sure that everything is of standard, but still making sure you're moving on through the year?
Well, everyone that comes to a combine fills out a COVID-19 form online just in registration. Then when they get to the gym, they have to have their temperature taken. Everybody has to be masked up. They have their temperature taken. They get a couple squirts of hand sanitizer, and then they fill out another COVID-19 form. It's a questionnaire because we just want to make certain, if at all possible, we're not bringing a lot of young men in that are ill. We do our drills. We're not doing as much testing as we did, so there's less interaction with the coaches and the players. It's much more getting them out there doing separated drills, watching them do their work, and then we play, and then we get done. As far as the season's going to go, you know, we're just watching. The NBA's doing. I mean, heck, Adam Silver's a sharp guy. He's leading the way in everything. The bubble is really working for them. The additional testing that they just announced this week that they got from Yale is really cool. And I just think that between the therapeutics and the vaccines and the things that are coming, by the time we're ready to play in March, I think we're going to play a full schedule in front of fans and we're going to be fine. And if not, we'll watch what everybody else does and adjust accordingly.
Now, obviously, like you were talking about earlier, you have the work in the community, teams do, the leagues do, the players do. And I'll get the Jamestown stuff going up again here because they are big in that. How do you pitch that to the players that are interested in playing? How do you make clear to them what it is that the TBL is?
Well, I mean, we're pretty pretty vocal about our vision. It's on everything we do on social media. So most of these guys know this. 90% of our kids come from combines and tryout events. So that is a conversation at that event. Listen, this is who we are. If you're a big time party that wants to smoke weed and go around and cause a lot of confusion with a lot of women, you're probably not going to like us. It's probably not the right fit for you. We're definitely not going to like you, because you have to be a role model. You have to be an example. Do you have to be perfect? No. Are we getting into your personal life and tell you where you can and come can go and not go? No. But we're not going to have anybody that's out there that are behaving in a manner that I think are unbecoming of what we want to do, because we are role models and we are that way. And so we tend to, the great thing about combines is it's not just film. We get to see young men's body languages. We get to see how they act, how they interact, how they respond to their teammates. And that goes in a lot into how we pick them for the league.
And so what we were just watching just a second ago was video inside the Jamestown team house, the Jamestown Jackal team house. Another example of how as one team, for sure, as an example, directly puts everybody, their team, into the community. I mean, that house is in the community, and that's where the players live, ensuring that the players and everybody part of the team are deeply rooted in the community. You mentioned how character is super important as a player, as a part of the league. Are there any rules set up that maintain that, or is it more of a culture kind of thing, or how does that work?
I think it's more culture, less rules, more conversation, less discipline. So we want to be aware of what our expectations are and set them early, and then communicate with these young men. And if it's not for them, then they can move on. Keep in mind, you know, if our season would have finished last year, over half of our guys would have left our league during the season to go to different leagues. So, you know, you're going to play in our league because you're going to make a little bit of money. You have a little bit of fame. You're going to have a little bit of opportunity. But the big piece is you're going to have a chance to play at a much higher level. And we're going to put our stamp of approval on you based on how that goes. So if you're really active in the community, we're going to talk about that. So when a coach calls me from Canada, from China, and they say, tell me about a kid, I'll say, well, listen, he leads his team at community hours. He's entertaining. I saw a video of him playing duck, duck, goose with kids in school. He's going to be great in your community. By the way, he can play a little bit. That's accepted. We know what they are, but teams want guys like that, especially ones that aren't going to be disruptive. We're not bringing them in to be stars. We're bringing them in to fit a system that we already have. And if they're going to complement and make it better, you're just more valuable for yourself. And so we tell them, we want you to clean up your social media. You know, when you become a pro athlete, your social media should no longer be an audience for your friends and family. It should be for the people that are your next employers. And in doing so, you should not have things that some people would think objectionable. And that's music that's too racy. That's you know, disrespecting women. That's drugs, alcohol, glorification. Those are all things that are going to spook European teams away. They're going to get scared. They'll say that. Listen, I went on their social media and saw how they were acting. I don't think he's the right kid for me. And so we tell them, clean it up and then watch how you carry yourself, because we can get you jobs almost anywhere in the world. But it's going to be important that we can really say, hey, every time we send a TBL player, it comes with a certain level of behavior standard that they're going to be proud of.
So, yeah, not only the behavior standard, David, but we've talked before about what innovations TBL does to help make players even more marketable, even in addition to their character that is a part of TBL. What are some of those other things that the league does, be it with stats and stuff like that, partnerships that you guys have that make those players even more marketable?
Well, I think the first thing is we have great venues. That we have a great uniform program from Infinite Apparel, where everybody wears the same brand uniform, so it looks good. Then our genius sports life stats are, you know, the Kansas uses it, and many of the FEMA countries use it. It's a really good level that when a game is done, it's loaded on our website and it's shot off to every FEMA country in the world. Our live streaming with Sportscaster is a really cool deal. So it's like what we're doing right now, but a game would be going on and anyone can be the broadcaster. So each team has their own broadcasting team that most of the people that tune in to watch the game are going to watch that. But if there's somebody that wants to hear Aaron do a game, Well, that might, you might have a whole another 1,000 fans that didn't even know about TBL, but they want to hear Aaron do a game. So, you know, it's been a multiplier of about tenfold with our viewership. So that's the technology that's getting our guys out there. 143 countries last year saw games of ours played, and we barely played a half a season. So, you know, from that standpoint, that's a really cool technology. We just added a new text marketing company that's going to be able to allow us to communicate with all of our fans on a much better basis, because we can text them directly specials and game times and merch and all that kind of stuff. And we're looking at I'm trying to finalize a deal on Monday with a company that will be able to film all of our games remotely. So they'll put cameras into every one of our venues. And then from New York, they will actually run the cameras because they're all worked remotely. And our standard of quality will go through the roof because it'll all be the same. So we're just constantly looking at ways to improve the fan experience as well as what we do for our players.
And finally, let's talk then about how that's worked. Some of the guys that have already been out while the season was cut short, definitely not a shortage of guys being sent out of the TBL before everything hit.
Well, again, we had, I think we had had 20 or 30 guys that had already gone out through the season, and it was about to be a lot more. We had 5 guys that were, you know, contracts in hand and tickets, and they couldn't go when it happened. But, you know, just last week, 2 guys from Jamestown just signed in Germany. You know, one kid, Drew Cushingberry, was a perfect example of what we do. He was the MVP of the national champion Ferris Division II team out of Detroit area, out of Michigan. The next year, he tries out at a combine we have in Detroit, makes it, gets a contract, goes to Jamestown, shows well in training camp, makes the team, probably 6th man to start with, becomes a starter, is having a really nice season. And then the season gets cut short, he keeps training, and now he's just signed at Pro A Germany. Well, Pro A Germany is going to make you, you know, probably anywhere from $45,000-$50,000 to $100,000 is what they make. So he's leveraged this system perfect to do the showcase piece, and he's a great kid. We can put a good word on him because, listen, he's going to be someone you're proud of. He joins a guy like Jackson Trapp that went over there the year before and became one of their best players. So the better our guys do in the countries, the better they behave, the more they drag the next group of guys with them.
Yeah, I did meet Drew when we were out in Jamestown. He is a very good guy. So I can speak to the truth that you're saying right there for sure. And then finally,
but everything else I said has been a lie. Is that what you're saying?
Well, we'll let everybody else figure that out. Okay. Obviously the fans want to be a part of TBL teams for one, because they're a part of the community. Yes, but also people want to watch basketball because it's good basketball. And I've heard it from you and Carl Nell, and basically everyone who's a part of TBL uses one of two. Either they're the third eye is basketball or AA of the basketball in the United States. Touch on that for a second as far as how you consider the talent level in TBL.
Well, you know, it would be, in my opinion, you know, I would use the term Pro B. I wouldn't use the term minor. When I was in the NBL Canada, I never liked that they called them minor league because, quite frankly, if the Raptors didn't exist, they would never call that league minor. That would be the Pro League of Canada. It wouldn't be nothing minor, but because we have an NBA team there, then they say, well, the NBL Canada is minor. No, they're not. A couple years ago, the London Lightning of the champion team for the NBL Canada played the Raptors 905, who were the champion G League team, and beat them by 20-plus points. They had Royce White. They were really good. It was a great win. It just says that, but they played 4 other times earlier than that, and they lost. So probably 20 to 30% of the time, an NBL Canada team could compete with the G League team. I would argue our league is probably just under them, and maybe it's a little higher percentage, but we would compete with them like that. So the comparison of us to the NBL, to the G League, is really pretty close. And quite frankly, if you look at our guards, I would say it's very close. As you go up the size ladder, you know, there's some NBA two-way guys that are pretty darn good. But, and we can't afford those guys because they're making good money someplace else. But our guards, our small forwards, they're amongst the best in America and around the world. And they really impact a lot. So the level of play is great. Because we don't have a lot of lumbering big men, we're fast. We score a lot of points. We get up and down the court. We play NBA rules, except we allow for offensive, defensive goaltending, like the FIBA rules. So when the ball hits the rim, it's live. So our athletes can take it off the rim or dunk it back in. And it's funny to listen to the fans. They go, "Wow, that's goaltending." And it's not. It's a rule that FIBA uses, that the Europeans use, that I think is one worth stealing because it makes the game even more fun.
David, we have yet to talk about this individual. Can you briefly talk about, or in depth talk about, who we have on the screen and why she makes the league so special?
Well, number one, she's smoking hot. I can't believe that that's been my wife for 40 years. She looks exactly like the day we met. I look like I ate that guy. It's been a bad deal for her. I always say she's the first and only female African-American to own a male pro sports league. I know The Rock's been talking about his new partner, Danny, whatever her last name is, as the first female to own a male pro sports league. That's not true because Evelyn's been at it for 3 years. But we celebrate that she is. That's an awesome thing for the XFL and that they're back. But what makes Evelyn special isn't that she's a female African-American. What makes her special is she's a Black mom. And as a mother, she understands her guys. She understands her community. Things that listen, I have been in a Black world being married to her for over 40 years. I was raised at a school that was, the athletes were predominantly Black. So I know a lot about what the Black experience is. But as much as I know, as much as my children are considered African-American, I've still never been Black. So I don't know what it feels like to walk by a car and have a woman roll her window up just because of the color of my skin. My kids have, I know. A woman cinch her purse up a little tighter because she's afraid I might jack her purse. Or you walk into a 7-Eleven, every eye is on you. Or the siren goes off when you drive through a stop sign. You know, my son would say, "Dad, I know if I'm getting pulled over, the first thing I do is put both hands out of the window so they don't think I'm carrying a gun." I would never think of that. I would just say, "What's wrong, officer?" It's a different world that we're all raised in. And this year, you know, I hope that the George Floyd thing has been a change and has allowed us to have the conversation. And I think the dialogue's been great. Evelyn has vision that I can't possibly have. So her passion, her heart for community, we are community assets because of her. She is as pure a person as I've ever met. The day I met her, Aaron, I knew I would marry her. I've never seen anybody that beautiful with that pure heart. And 40 plus years later, she's more special than you can imagine. And so for me, I'm honored to take her direction as we lead this league into the future and create something that is a hashtag, a different league, because there's no one else that really is going to do it the way we do it community-wise. And it all starts with her.
And, you know, I been in leagues, been with teams, and I've met a lot of different people. TBL says they're a different league. I have never met anyone at the higher ups of a league or a team nearly like Evelyn. Kindness, passion, vision, nothing like it, which is one of the main reasons. I mean, there's a lot of great about TBL, but she definitely is one of the main reasons why I've stayed around, and people I know have continued to tune in and watch to see what happens. It's because of what she brings to the table. So that is absolutely true about Evelyn.
Well, you know, Aaron, you'll see she's like a mother to these guys. There's guys that will come up and say, "Mama Mags, what's up?" They'll hug her. She sees them after the game. If they cut up a little bit, she'll say, "Let me talk to you." You know, she'll pray with them if they need it. When she talks to these guys, she'll get down on her hands and knees and tell them this. She's very demonstrative. I know that when I'm in trouble, I also know it. But she's just so passionate, and our guys just respect that. Do they like me? Sure. You know, I'm cool, whatever. I played at a high level. But I'm just another basketball guy to them. To her, she's a mom. She's somebody that cares about them. And, man, that's something from a business guy, I can build on that. That's something communities want to support. Sponsors want to support, kids are attracted to, and makes everything that much stronger.
Yeah, and I'll pull this one up again just so we can see it. For two reasons for sure. Obviously, we're just talking about Evelyn. She's on episode 8. You can find that at the time, the longest interview, just because it's so easy to sit down and talk with her. And then also, we were talking about player experience. We do have episode 33 with Jeremy Bright, who played in Owensboro. So feel free to go check those out as well. David, one more thing I got to pull up, and then we'll close off here. Give me one second here. Just as another note, if any of you are interested, we did 2019-2020 draft combine. We did video interviews and audio interviews with everybody associated with teams beforehand. So you can find us at patreon.com/globallyballing, and you'll find interviews from 2019-2020 season with all of those teams associated. David, anything else you think we need to talk about or people need to hear about TBL that we haven't talked about already?
You know, Aaron, the one thing I would say is that you are building something really unique with Globally Ballin'. Your vision for leagues off the beaten path, people that are playing for the love of the game, people that are unique personalities, it's worth supporting what you do. You and your wife, your brothers help you. You have a very unique passion that we celebrate. We just are so fortunate that we met you and appreciate everything that you've done. You know, you're not, most people do something and they've got one hand out to shake your other hand, the other hand behind their back, trying to figure out when I can pull it up across to make some money. That's not who you are. Everything you do is about first quality, first promotion, you're fair, it's entertaining, it's engaging. So I would encourage anyone that's listening to this to follow everything that's on the Globally Ballin' podcast, because these are intriguing, they're fascinating, they're great. And I just think it's something that's only going to get bigger and bigger. And we're just fortunate and blessed to be a part of having you support our movement and where we're going.
Thank you, David. I really, really appreciate that. And then I'll pull up here just to add to that here. One thing we did start to kind of get ready for the season and cover all the growth. If you go to globallyballin.com/articles and you go up here, it says The Basketball League TBL. One of our writers has started a series covering every team in TBL as we move forward. So to get a little more in-depth information on any of those teams that you like, he's completely from the outside. He's never heard of the league, which makes it kind of fun. Just completely dives into it to see what his first impression is. So go ahead and check those out at globallyballin.com/articles. Go to TBL or the Basketball League. David, thank you very much for joining us, and stay safe and healthy, and good luck out there, all right?
Be blessed, my friend, and we're looking forward to 2021.
You as well, man.
Thanks.
Thank you. Hey, everybody. Thank you again for getting through another episode. We really appreciate it. I just want to quick redirect you to where you can find us one more time to kind of close out this whole episode. You can find us at facebook.com/globallyballin, Twitter at globallyballin, Instagram at globallyballinofficial. The name was taken. And patreon.com/globallyballin. Again, what you can find there is all of these episodes music-free as well as ad-free. And a bunch of other tiers that offer you a lot of other stuff. There is a ton of content available for you that you are not getting here that's out there on the Patreon page. So if you want to check that out, that would be great. And then, of course, again, if you like the show, we would really appreciate a rating and a review wherever you listen. I know I normally suggest Apple Podcasts, but if there's a way, you know, if you listen to it somewhere else and there's a way to rate it, that would be great as well. But any of that is very, very helpful and very much appreciated. It does take a lot of work putting these things together and editing them up and making it all mesh together and getting our interviews lined up and all this. So it takes a lot, but we really believe in it, and we encourage you, if you believe in it too, doing one of those things to help us out would be fantastic. Otherwise, simply you listening to our episodes coming out is a huge blessing to us. So thank you very much for supporting the show, and you'll get an episode from us here in the coming days.